My name's Billy. I'm an addict. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great.
Good.
All righty. Quite an honor to be reading this, particularly from my sister, Archer. Okay, even in a remote corner of paradise, the disease can find us, and so can recovery. She kept coming back and found freedom through fearless inventory work, breath of life. I have no problem accepting the fact that I was born an addict. It's in my genes. When I grew up, I was the only white kid or haole in my class. In Hawaiian, haole means without breath or life spirit. With my red hair and freckles, I was so white, I felt repulsive. People would look at me and say, "What is wrong with her? She looks six. She's so white." I felt a lot of shame. In the fourth grade, I asked my brother to draw a big chain and anchor tattoo on my arm. My dad was in the Navy, and that year we had a Chilean sea captain staying at our house. I wanted to be him, or Pippi Longstocking, who was really rich, was strong enough to lift a horse, had a pet monkey, and stayed mostly alone. She looked like me. I had been molested by various people, friends, parents, babysitters, and people in the neighborhood since kindergarten. It made me hard inside. I froze my heart, and I also found my worth. I became an object, and my sexuality became my only power. It's where I got my validation, where I believed I had my strength and my skills. I was already walking the streets in Waikiki at 15 years old. I found recovery when I was a teenager, but I came in and out of the rooms for many years. I would sit in the back of the meeting and say nothing. I would ask a woman to sponsor me because I needed a name when someone asked me, "Who's your sponsor?" Because of my addiction and the ways and means I used to get more, I caused a lot of harm to myself and others. No amount of degradation would kill the pain I carried inside me. I relapsed many times. I lost pregnancies. I was riddled with disease, shame, fear, and anger. At one point, I was living in a crack house in East LA, and I had one dress. It was actually supposed to be a tube top. I was filthy. I lived like an animal. From my window, I would watch the ladies at the bus stop going to their jobs and hanging laundry in their small fenced-in yards. I was dying. My spirit was dying. I asked God, "Why can't I have that? Why can't I have just a simple life? I don't need much. I just want to feel to be decent." With what resources I could gather, I moved to a rural and remote corner of Hawaii. I didn't know anyone there. I asked God to help me to help myself. I was desperate. I called the hotline and went to an NA meeting. There were three people at the table. They all shared, and then they all looked at me. It was time to open my mouth and speak. I began to stick around the rooms. We were a small group. We would hang together, go to a meeting, a movie, to a dinner. We'd drink coffee all night and talk. We'd call each other and check in before bed and wake up to another day clean. I put some days together. I went to gatherings in our region, and I realized that people on other islands were clean. Then I went to a convention and found there were people in other states and even in other countries who were clean. My life in recovery began to expand, and the darkness could not stay. I was letting in the light of recovery. I made a decision, and a spiritual life became real. I began to feel a little freedom. Suddenly, I had choices. I went back to school and graduated with a degree. I made some amends and got my legal problems worked out. I dedicated myself to service in the program. At a certain point, I became very serious. I was able to focus a little bit better, and I used better, a bit better, and I used, no, I wielded the traditions and our policy in service like a sword. Someone told me, if everyone lived by the rule of an eye for an eye, we would all be blind. I had to stop putting out the eyes of those around me in service. I learned that my life depends on NA unity, and I needed to get tougher skin and a softer heart. I began to realize that I was still practicing behaviors that were killing me. I had to give it up. I had given my sponsor inventories that address crimes against society and institutions, but I hadn't given up the crimes against me. The results of holding on to the shame of the past had me acting out in dishonesty, violent anger, sexual addiction, serial relationships, gambling, retail therapy, debt, and anorexia, bulimia. It was full-blown addiction without dope. These behaviors are defects of character that stand in the way of my living a full life. I had a taste of what freedom could be, but I didn't know how to get it. I was exhausted. I had some beliefs stuck inside that were killing me. All of my anger, resentments from the past, my childhood, my mistakes, my grief, my loss, the pain so deep, no amount of beastly behavior could dull it. Had to go. If I didn't let go of all of it, I wasn't going to live. In tears, I wrote it all out on a paper. I found a sponsor who was like a surgeon when it came to inventories. She said, "Are you ready to meet yourself?" Wow. I thought, I don't know. What will happen when I let this out of me? I was afraid. She told me, HP is right here, right now. We are loved and it's safe. So I gave it up. And after I did, I felt relief. I wondered why I didn't do this sooner. I felt alive. And you know what? I felt clean. I realized that clean is the new high. This was step work. I liked it. I learned that I wasn't going to get hurt by this. I also knew I had a lot more work to do. Construction was underway. I love my sponsor. She helps me live the spiritual principles. She looks deep into my eyes and reflects me back to me. She has loved me, whether I brought grace or petty meanness to the table. And she has taught me to love myself despite it all. I realized that I was not one person. I couldn't be after being so fractured. I am really divided into three people. There is lower me, that is the addict. She can be dishonest, can pinch a baby when no one is looking. She's the one who smoked your bail money. This is still a part of me. Then there is the middle me. She is a citizen. She pays her taxes, pays her bills, is a good daughter, sister, and wife, and worker. She is decent. She is trusted servant. She can show up and be accountable. She is generous, funny, and loving. Higher me is my exact nature, who my HP intends me to be. This is the part of me that is compassionate, non-judgmental, open-mindedness, and full of grace. This part of me, pure light and pure love. When I first sponsored someone, I asked, how do I do this? What kind of role is this? What kind of voice do I need? I learned that if I am just human, a recovering addict as I am, and I allow HP to help us both, it will all be okay. My HP sends me people so that I can learn about myself. Securing the love of this fellowship and working the steps, I have begun to heal. I have learned forgiveness for those who harmed me when I was little. This is possible. Those memories sadden me, but I no longer have to carry them as a burden. I have come to understand our four-sided symbol as a framework for living: self, God, society, and service. That is the foundation for how I live this program and how I work the steps. I have learned how to transform my anger into creative action. I have learned how to disagree and even argue and still get along. I have learned healthy patterns in relationships and with family. I have learned that goodwill means that I believe that everything another person does or believes in as is important as my own actions or beliefs. That's a simple statement, but it has led to a very intricate path of discovery. Some very surprising things have happened, and I know that this is the magic of recovery. I will be working a step, and the moment I am ready, a veil will be pulled from my eyes and I will see the truth. This is the path to freedom. I feel high on life. I laugh from the bottom of my belly with my mouth wide open. I feel joy and unself-consciousness. I feel on a very deep level, I have a conscious contact. Prayer and meditation have brought me a connection to others and to my HP that addiction had made impossible. Addiction separates me from life. NA has allowed me to find my way to my heart, to listen to it, to think from it. My heart isn't frozen anymore. It's warm. It feels like the difference between sitting in the shade and sitting in the sun. I am so grateful. I have been given the breath of life. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous.
Wonderful. Thanks, Billy. And now I'm going to pass the meeting over to Archer.
Oh, Billy, thank you. Thank you, everybody here. My name is Archer, and I'm an addict in recovery. And wow, I want to thank my friends in service at this meeting and all of you that are here supporting me in my recovery today. So emotional. You know, at the beginning of lockdown, I got an email, you know, on social media, there's that weird mailbox. So it's not people that are your quote unquote friends, but, you know, others. And in this other mailbox, I got a message from wonderful Francis saying, "Hey, man, is that your story? And would you like to come and speak at this meeting?" And I was like, "Oh no," you know, the way I feel when anybody realizes that, I just feel like a deer in the headlights, completely exposed, because obviously my entire inventory is in this story. So at any given time, you might be able to see me and go like, she's kind of acting out on this or that. But anyway, I was very curious about it. And he said, you know, you know, we've got another author sharing this coming week. Why don't you come and just see what it's like? And I was so curious, you know, because once again, it's this, the therapeutic value, you know, what does it feel like? I know two other people, actually, you know, now I know many other people whose stories are in the book, but for whatever reason, you know, it just doesn't come up. Like if I'm asked to speak somewhere, I just don't even think about it. And I think that's because it's not really just my story, it's our story. And I'm so grateful that Billy read it because, you know, I have met so many people along the way of every walk of life, every gender, every age. And, you know, we identify with one another. This is the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous and the therapeutic value is that our experience is what carries the message to one another in a very specific way. I had a friend that I've met during lockdown in the UK who said, "Oh my God, that's your story." And this guy was, you know, had issues growing up with discrimination. And he was like, "I didn't even know a white person could be discriminated against." I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, man, I felt that same way as a kid. I was the alien, you know?" And I was like, "Wow, you know, some dude in the UK in treatment." But anyway, I listened to that guy very intently. At that first meeting here at the Paradise book study, and what his experience was like to have his story there, and you know, because we're not frozen in amber, thank God, you know, so much life has passed down the river since those 16 years ago when I wrote this story, and I was in a hotel in Dublin. Where they were holding the European Convention of NA. And I had shared in a workshop on sponsorship. And, you know, the share after the share, I just was like, I didn't want to have the share after the share. I was so nutted up and nervous like I am now. I'm freezing cold, but my hands are on fire, you know. and so I just walked out of that meeting after talking to a few women and making some, you know, time to sit with them later in the day. And I walked right across the hallway into a meeting that was underway. And it was about the sixth edition and about the stories reflecting and the international fellowship that we have. And I think Narcotics Anonymous is in 143 different countries, you know, where God goes by many different names, but addiction is exactly the same. So I went in there and the person leading the workshop said, hey, people, come on. Will you please write some of these stories? I'll have a box in the lobby. And at any point this weekend, go ahead and put them in there. And, you know, we just need more contributions. Why is everybody so shy to write? And I thought, oh, man, you know, I get post-it notes from my higher power that says, Archer, it's time for a little homework. And I took that opportunity to go up and just on the hotel room stationery, it just poured out. And I just thought, what the heck? And I thought, well, you know, I'm from Hawaii. And, but you know, we're still in the United States. We're the 50th state. They're not going to, you know, it's just an exercise. They're not going to consider this to be included in the text. And I promptly forgot about it. And, you know, it was really interesting because, later that year, we hosted the World Convention. And so we were very busy with that. And I was chairperson of our region at that time. And, you know, there was a lot to do. And we're spread out on 8 different islands. So when we do service here, like for regional service, you fly to another island. We rotate it every quarter. And I think at that point in time, I was almost like 10 years at regional service, and I've never not had service as a part of my recovery. And I hope I never will. I love Narcotics Anonymous, and it's so much a part of my life. It allows me to have that broad base that is described in our symbol. The broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. And because I'm so loved and supported by my fellows today, I'm able to take risks and to grow and to travel. When I was at that convention in Ireland writing that story, I had just lost my 3rd pregnancy with my beautiful husband now. And I was devastated. We tried through science, we tried through magic, we tried through prayer. And a lot of the damage that had happened to my body when I was out there that I talk about in this story kept me from being able to carry. And I was devastated. And I'd put so much hope into that. And really, you know, when I went off to Ireland, it was about making a decision whether I was going to stay or not. And I don't mean Narcotics Anonymous. I just mean here, walking in this world, because I just felt depleted. And I had gotten far away from my conscious contact. And I received a lot of love at that convention. And I received a message from some women there that asked me to sponsor them to come and see them and visit them. And I started to really get the travel bug. And I think I began to just move, because if I kept moving, I was going to be okay. So I would begin to plan these adventures. And one of the things I would always do is I would MapQuest. So this gives you an idea of the year. I would MapQuest from the hotel to the meeting, wherever it was that I was going. And I would plan out this, you know, this thing, what I was going to see and what I was going to do. And I had picked up photography again. And really, you know, what I found out later is that I might have lost the ability to carry a child, but I was not, but I was given the gift of finding my art again, you know, of carrying a creative energy that gave me as much joy. And so one of the places that was on my bucket list, because I wanted to be a Chilean sea captain as a kid, and I wanted to be a pirate, and I wanted to be Pippi Longstocking, was Portugal. And so one of the things, one of the most difficult service positions is the webmaster, if any of you know, because meetings change and resentments happen and meetings divide, or we lose a meeting place because somebody acted dumb, or we grew, the meeting grew and we needed a bigger venue. Anyway, the schedule is constantly changing. And so what I did was I wrote a note to the Lisbon Regional Service, and I said, oh, hello, aloha, Archer, Attica. direct from Hawaii. I'm going to be coming to visit, and I just wondered if your meeting schedule is right so that I could find the meeting. I've printed it, and they wrote back and said, what time is your plane arriving? And I was like, oh no, you guys, I'm a counter dependent. I can do it by myself. Thank you very much. No. I already have a bus taking me from the airport to the hotel, blah, blah, blah. You know, and they, so I wrote this back. No, it's early in the morning. I don't want to bother anybody. No, it's all fine. I'll see you at the meeting. I just want to know, is the meeting schedule right? And this addict wrote back and said, a spiritual principle of recovery is being willing to receive help. What time is your plane arriving? I was like, oh my God, you know, who the heck is this? So I told them when I landed there, here's addict standing there and picks me up and scoops me up and puts me in the car. And we get to my hotel and he goes, okay, you go upstairs, you take a shower. You've traveled a long way. You lay down and take a nap and rest. Then my wife and I are coming back to pick you up. You'll come to our house. We'll give you dinner and then we're going to the meeting. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. So I just followed direction and I did all this. And when I got to the meeting there in Lisbon, I went to their house. I had a beautiful dinner. The wife told me, go lay down. You're tired. I laid on their bed and they put a little blanket over me. And I went to the meeting there and there were the Portuguese addicts, very intense. And they said, oh, addict from Hawaii, because here I come in with my my face. And they gave me a burner phone that had everybody's phone number in Portuguese Fellowship on it. And they said, while you're here traveling in our country, we want you to know that everywhere you'll be able to reach somebody if you need us. And it's okay to ask for help. I was like, wow, you guys, thank you so much. You know, really secure in the love of the fellowship. On the last day of my time there, which was about 10 days, this addict that had, reached out to me and took me into their home, fed me and brought me to meetings. They said, you know, Archer, we understand that you have your plan and all the things that you're going to see. But on the last day, would you like to come around Lisbon with me and see the real Lisbon, see where my using took place and where I've gotten clean and the way it was growing up here, in a hard city as an addict. And I said, yes, absolutely. He said, I don't care if you walk around like a tourist with your camera. I won't be embarrassed. I said, oh, thank you so much. I would love to do that. It would be an honor. So I had used that phone to make a couple of phone calls that they had given me. This was at a time when a U.S. telephone didn't work and I didn't really understand about the SIM card yet. This was around 2008, I guess. And anyway, we were in his little Volkswagen car and in the old Alfama neighborhood with the beautiful tiles all over the walls and the high angular streets with the streetcar. And we were about to go to our next destination to look out over the city and have a lunch. And the little burner phone rang. And I was like, oh, and I picked it up and listened. And it was my friend on Maui, Sharon. And she said, Archer, your story's in the basic text. I just saw a draft. Your story's in the book. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, I just thought, my first thought was horror and shock. And what did I even write? I couldn't even remember what I wrote. I was mortified. I felt exposed and I also felt afraid because I didn't want to hurt anybody. I didn't want to hurt my parents. I didn't really know what I had said. And then a second later, I felt a wave of gratitude and vulnerability and love and the honor that it is to share our story. But all of this must have passed over my face. And this person next to me, being a very sensitive addict, looked at me and said, oh my God, what's wrong? What happened? Did somebody die? And I turned and I said, I don't know. I said, my story's going to be in the basic text. And he looked at me and grabbed my arm and he goes, mine is too. Oh my God, I haven't even told anybody yet. I feel like such an asshole. What are they gonna think of my home group? I went, oh my God. So can you imagine how magnificent my higher power is to put us together in that very moment, in that little car in the middle of Lisbon, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It is our very distinctive experience that speaks to one another. And my higher power lines this up again and again and again. Inexplicable miracles and coincidences. You know, I love what our friend Iris says. She says, you know, a coincidence is a happening of synchronicity where the higher power prefers to remain anonymous. You know, it happens again and again. It was one of the miracles of this, you know. So I have listened to speakers and friends. I've listened to the experience of those. And I think that the thing about this meeting is that, about the Paradise Book Study, is that it's very much like the Living Clean book. What happens now? You know, here's the early recovery, but life goes on and life adds weight to the bar. And some of the most amazing things that I've heard at this meeting have been what happened after the story. You know, the loss, the gains, the wins, and the strange turns and twists and miracles of this life clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And we wouldn't ever know that. I wouldn't know that if I didn't stay. One of the reasons I got involved in this meeting is because at about the third meeting that I attended of this meeting, we got bombed horribly. And one of the gifts of Narcotics Anonymous has been that I've been a public school teacher. That degree that I got that I talk about in the story, I became a school teacher. The irony. Everybody that knew me growing up was like, what? You never went to school. I go, I know. It's kind of like penance. I go every single day now. But I have for the last 29 years, you know. And gosh, at 20 years of service, I got a certificate. It said, it was from the state. It said, for faithful and loyal service to the people of the state of Hawaii. And I thought, wow, you know. From being that kid on the street in Waikiki, ripping off people and wrecking their lives and just taking and just destroying the safety of this place, to be able to give back. That's really the gift of Narcotics Anonymous, to feel decent, to be no greater, no less than anyone else, you know, to be of the earth and to enjoy this experience in this life. This is what my higher power means for me and means for all of us. You know, the word courage comes from the French word cœur, which means heart. And I do feel the warmth in my heart. I do feel connected and I do feel alive. And it takes a lot of courage sometimes just to show up, suit up and show up in this day for life. And it takes a lot of courage to talk about things that I feel afraid about, you know, to my sponsor or to people in my family or my support. It takes a lot of courage to be able to work steps or to go to my sponsor again with the same issue and say, man, I'm back doing it again. I want to get free again. And she loves me no matter what. I can listen to you all share and I can ask you, how did you do this? Or what happened when we recently lost a grandchild, you know? I have beautiful stepchildren. In fact, tomorrow it will be 22 years of marriage. We were married on Valentine's Day. I married my best friend and my meeting buddy. You know, we weren't even each other's types. but truly, it's a love story. Like my friend Billy says, this is truly a love story, Narcotics Anonymous. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for supporting me in my recovery, for allowing me to be brave. You know, since this time, since Portugal, I have traveled all over the place and attended Narcotics Anonymous. I've had a sponsee who was a Muslim. I've had a sponsee who was a Hindu. I've been working the last couple of years with an atheist sponsee. You know, this program works for everybody. In every country. When I first saw that IP in Mandarin of how it works, I thought, oh my God, what if all the literature I had was only written in Mandarin? How would I get the message of recovery? This is why I'll never stop being of service and why I contribute to the seventh tradition. Because there's another addict just like me. I was sharing at a convention on Zoom online in Canada early in lockdown, and I saw them do a beautiful slideshow beforehand of their fellowship over the years, of their conventions and their service conferences and regional service and meetings and campouts and all the beautiful life that we get to experience together, the joy and the laughter. And I saw they put up an IP. One of their translations had been into Cree, the native language of part of Canada. And I thought, man, there is a Cree addict just like me, you know, who was on the street. I got picked up by the police and brought to the ER, and the doctor said, get out of my hospital. You disgust me. She has a right to get clean too, in a language that she understands. She can get this gift of a new life lived clean, and she can become a servant, a faithful and loyal servant of the state, being a community contributor, being a servant in Narcotics Anonymous, being a good wife, stepmother, sister, friend, just for today. I'm so grateful for this life that Narcotics Anonymous has given to me, for this adventure. I've got a fellowship in Indonesia I feel very close to. And one of the highlights of my time there was to do H&I at Karobokan Prison. And, you know, they had handwritten some pages from the step working guide, and it was on all kinds of different papers all bound together. And there is a module there where the guards agree not to sell drugs and where Narcotics Anonymous meetings come in. And in each cell I can have the translation one night, and then Wade will get it another night, and Michael will have it another night, and Joe, and so forth. You know, I hope that a step working guide is translated into Bahasa, into all of the languages that are there and in emerging fellowships. And so I thank you for ongoing support to this program. And this is a message to be carried. And each one of us does it in such a unique way. So I want to thank Paradise Strong for hooking me up to this. This has just amplified my recovery. As my sponsor says, this pandemic has been, you know, a gift wrapped in poop, man. It really has been one of the most magnificent things. I think I've probably gone to 600 meetings in the last 300 days, and I feel full of the sunlight of the spirit, completely connected and dialed into the magic that Narcotics Anonymous is, and the way my life changes and grows and unfolds in a way that is so beautiful. So I've said enough, and I want to thank you for being here for me. I love you.